You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us here on the Common Sense Show. My name is Dave Hodges. I am the host of this show, and we come to you live, usually. Sometimes we come to you pre-recorded, sometimes. But either way, we always have great guests, and we're really glad that you've joined us tonight. We've had a terrific show so far. In this hour, we're going to be joined by my friend Pat Wood, and we're going to be talking about some Agenda 21 issues. And we're going to be getting in a little bit to technocracy again. But first, I want to remind everybody that we're brought to you by, the best storable food that I can find. We went to our manufacturer and we said, hey, can we bring people lower cost food with less volume? People couldn't afford the 6 months to 2 years that we recommend. So we came up with a 4 week supply, and it was originally $250. It's now $99. No glyphosates, no GMOs. It's just great 25 year shelf life storable food, restaurant quality, $99. It's the best deal in America. You can't find a better deal than what we've got right here. Here's how you take advantage of this. Go to preparewithdave.com. Write that into the URL. No coupon code needed. Get started. Get started right now. You don't wait any longer, because FEMA says we can't help you. And I have read so many, many, many things about FEMA. Oh, 3 days, 2 weeks. Nope, you're on your own. And you are. Preparewithdave.com. And the best deal that's out there. Anyway, we'll get to Pat in just a second. I just wanted to mention one more thing. We're also brought to you by ReadyMadeResources.com, my friend Bob Griswold, King Prepper. And Bob is the very, very, very best at providing things that you need to get through a crisis. Water filtration, communications, night visions. He finances the high-end items, and he'll consult with you for free. And that's a big departure from what a lot of people do in this business. How do you find Bob? Well, go to readymaderesources.com, look at what he has to offer, and then call the number that's on the screen, and one of his friendly staff will help you process your order. And if you need advice, as I said, it's free of charge, readymaderesources.com. Well, anyway, let's go to my friend Pat Wood. Pat and I have known each other now for a number of years, and I've told this story many times. I've admired his work as a young guy going back to the early 80s, 1979, 1980, when I found his book, The Trilateral Commission, and it was a life-changing book for me. And today, Pat is out there like the Paul Revere of the anti-technocracy movement, saying, the technocrats are coming, the technocrats are coming. Well, they're no longer coming. They're here, and here to talk to us about this and the dangers that they pose is Pat Wood. Hi, Pat. Glad you could join us.
Hey, Dave, and isn't that the truth? They are here, all around us.
Oh, my gosh. You know, Pat, if you would have told me 5 years ago that we would have been dealing with the things we're dealing with today, I would have said, no, maybe 20 years, maybe 30. But we're right in the middle of it now. You know, Art Bell on the old show, Coast to Coast, used to have a term, Pat, and he called it the quickening. And he said, things are accelerating so fast right now, it's called the quickening. And I used to kind of chuckle at that. I didn't take it seriously until now.
Yeah. 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 It makes sense. You know, there was a there was a book written back, it was a late 60s, I think, called Future Shock by Alvin Toffler. And if anybody cares to go back and look at that, it's probably online somewhere, but that's exactly what's happening today, that the future is happening so fast that people lose the ability to really stay in touch with it. And it's like things actually become magical. You know, that's the only way you can explain some stuff. Well, it's just magic. How does that happen? I don't know. It's magic. And that's not a good trend, by the way, that people would think of anything as magic. But we reached a point where some things just simply cannot be comprehended by the average person on the street, period.
No. I find myself, in fact, last night I was talking to some gentlemen, and I mentioned that I had a radio show. Because they were asking me about what I do, and they said, "Oh, what's it about?" I sat there for a second, Pat, and I was dumbfounded. How do I explain this to people who will have no idea what I do without sounding like an absolute lunatic?
Yeah, I know. You can't.
It is.
You know, there is no 30-second elevator speech that you can give to somebody. But, you know, it takes a while for somebody really to kind of get their mind wrapped around the reality of the world. It's not something that you can put on a bumper sticker and, you know, you follow some car down the road and you see a bumper sticker. So, dang, why didn't I think of that? It's not that way. Life is not a bumper sticker. It takes a little bit of investigative, you know, effort to understand how things work.
Yeah.
And that's all we're trying to do. You and I both are trying. We're on the same track there. We're trying to tell people how things work in the real world and what reality really is like.
Well, it's really true. You know, I had an experience. I had kind of an epiphany, I would say, December, January previous. And my son was taking this U.S. history class in high school. And I was going through some of the things he was learning with him. And he mentioned about how corrupt General Grant was when he became president. And he said, but Daddy really wasn't the corrupt one there. He said it was the people around him. He was too busy getting drunk. And he said, he said it was, they wrote about it like it was the most awful time in American history. And I asked him, I said, well, how do you think that compares to now? And his answer to me was, it's not even close. They thought that was the worst thing then. And I started reflecting on this, Pat. And here's a question I have for you. Has there been a time in American history that has been fraught with more danger, more threat to our way of life, our culture, our form of government than the time we live in now?
Outside of World War I and World War II, no. This is a silent war that's going on right now, and there may not be actually guns fired by the time it's over. This revolution is a scientific / quiet revolution, a takeover by stealth, if you will. But I'm afraid it's just as effective and it's just as dangerous in the end.
Mm-hmm.
For all the people that got shipped off to gulags, during the Soviet Revolution, USSR back in 1918, and then you had Hitler with his whole experiment stuff. You know, you take all the people that got shipped off to gulags because of those armed rebellions. We're in process of kind of seeing the same thing ahead of us, but without an armed rebellion. It's going to be a revolution of stealth. And the control that's coming on us, the system, if you will, of control is coming upon us, is much worse than any system that we've seen in history, in my opinion.
Yeah, a lot of people are conditioned to see the problems associated with the forces behind government. I think that's not a surprise for most Americans today. But what I think is surprising for them, Pat, is it's not a one-issue or two-issue game. It's what's coming at us is attempting to take over every single aspect of our lives.
That's correct. That's scientific dictatorship, Dave. And, it's not everybody that's behind this scientific dictatorship idea. Most people in the government are completely unaware of what's going on. They don't see technocracy as an issue at all. But if you examine big tech companies, the culture of big tech companies like Google and Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and a few of the other leading ones, you'll find that they're stacked with technocrats that believe in some utopian vision. They're not Marxists, they're not communists, and they're not leftists. They are utopian visionaries, if you will, who believe that their particular slant on truth, or what they think is truth, is the only valid source of truth in the universe, and everybody else is just an idiot. So they hate Christians, for instance. They hate the Bible. They think it's a harmful myth, not just a benevolent myth, it's a harmful myth. They'll take out the conservative movement completely. They'll take out the Democrat movement, the liberal progressive movement altogether. They have nothing in common with these various movements that we are familiar with. But this very narrow philosophy that big tech has, it's them versus everyone else, regardless of your political persuasion, does not matter. It's them versus everyone else. This is the danger today. These are the people that are advancing this cause. And we see it in the intelligence communities as well, where they're totally intertwined. Now we know that you know, the NSA is embedded with Google and with Facebook sucking data down. They're embedded with Homeland Security. You know, we've been complaining about these agencies for a very long time, you and I have anyway, that they've gone rogue, that they're over the top and they need to be stopped. No matter how hard you slap them, they just don't listen. They just continue with their stuff anyway. This is the hardcore position that these people have taken, that is them versus everyone else. And in the end of it, all the politicians that are helping them get to the top are going to get thrown under the bus, and so are all the leftists and progressives and commies and everything else you got in government. They're the useful idiots to these technocrats. And you know, this is the danger we face right now. This ideology of technocracy is just absolutely horrid. You remember when Eric Schmidt got hired by Google?
Yes.
To be the CEO is back in the early 2000s. You know, the defining criteria for him to actually get the nod for the job was whether or not he attended Burning Man up in the desert in Nevada, in northern Nevada, which is an incredible event where you have much of Silicon Valley attending. It's totally given over to Eastern mysticism and religion, for one thing, but it's also totally given over to debauchery, to drugs, to you name it. They do it up there in the desert, virtually no law enforcement whatsoever. And if people never heard of Burning Man, well, this is the Bohemian Grove, if you will, in type, to this class of people. And the more you look at stuff like, you can go see some videos of Burning Man on YouTube and see how crazy this is. This is the culture that we're facing right now. These people have accumulated enough power where they are exerting their influence over the world and the world view of America. And it's bad stuff, I'm telling you. It's bad stuff. This can't be judged in terms of Democrat versus Republican or liberal versus conservative or anything else. These people are a completely different animal.
You know, I hear what you're saying, and I do agree that the two-party system that we have are two wings of the same bird, except one wing is a lot more radical than the other. And it looks to me like the Democrats have been tabbed to be the water boy for ushering in a lot of this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But remember that the good old GOP has been just as instrumental along the way as the Democrats. And the only difference it really is the progressives, which is on the Democrat side, progressives say, let's do all this radical stuff tomorrow. The GOP says, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Let's not be so hasty about this. Let's, you know, let's talk about it. Let's arrive at some compromise or whatever. And in the end of it, they both end up in the same position that they envisioned. That's the only difference between them. And, you know, we keep complaining about Congress. Well, why hasn't Congress done anything, you know, to turn some of these things around? The answer is Congress doesn't want to. They never have. They're totally complicit with the whole thing. They don't know it. See, this is the useful idiot angle of this, Dave. They really, I don't think they understand at all that they're being used and played. They're, you know, they're playing a little game thinking, oh, aren't we so smug and aren't we so cool? They're playing this game that they think is reality. They don't see this other group at all. They don't see their ideology. They don't see what motivates them, and they don't see what they're doing. And they will be among the first people to be thrown under the bus if these technocrats actually win this war.
It makes me scratch my head, because I do things and I think about the consequences for my family. And I'm thinking, how could these people create the world that they want us to live in? And I want to get into the specifics in a moment. How could they create this knowing that their kids and grandkids are going to have to live in the cesspool they're creating?
That's exactly right. You know, Steve Jobs was an interesting case. He's the founder of Apple. You know, he's passed some years ago. Steve Jobs did not let his kids use the technology that they sold with Apple. Because he knew it was harmful and addictive to children. And a lot of the leaders of Silicon Valley now that have kids feel the same way. They won't let their kids have cell phones until they're like 15. And they won't let them use tablets and stuff like that because they know they're addictive and they know they're brainwashing tools. It's like, what a double standard. You know, they're changing the world. And yet, they know they're changing it for evil because they won't even let their own children participate in it.
I hear you on that point, but these changes are far more reaching than the technology that their kids participate in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about the fabric of society. We're talking about self-determination. Yes. We're talking about not being a victim of a depopulation plant. Right. I mean, there's so many things I could throw into this, and their kids have to live through this. That's what just boggles my mind. How could you sentence your kids to live in such a hellish nightmare?
I know. I can't explain that to you, honestly, but I did see something pretty telling last year that a lot of the people in Silicon Valley are having an attack of conscience about what they're doing. And this has given rise to an organization down in Big Sur, California, called the Esalen Institute, which was the place where Eastern mysticism was originally introduced into America, yoga and all kinds of other practices as well. Esalen has been repurposed to serve Silicon Valley and leaders in crisis. And so they're going down to Esalen to learn about Eastern mysticism, about how to meditate, and how to get in touch with their inner net. Their inner net, they're calling it, right? Whatever the heck that is. And so their answer to assuage their conscience is to go take a deep dive into Eastern mysticism and Hinduism and stuff like that. And I'll tell you what, if there was ever a dangerous thing to do on top of having a guilty conscience in the first place, you see, this will sear their conscience, if you will, to where they won't, you know, they'll think they're doing good for the rest of their lives. After they get into this stuff, you know, it's just wonderful. And that's what they're telling them. It's okay. You know, somebody has to do it. Somebody has to invent this stuff, because if you don't, somebody else will. And, you know, they're saying, yeah, man, you're good. You're good. You're good to go. You don't have to have a guilty conscience anymore. It's like, oh, brother. You know, wouldn't you like to get up there and whack them with a Bible or something? You know, you want ethics? How about take a look at this one?
Well, ethics is not even a consideration to what's going on. I just, I mean, Pat, I look back and I think about how your career has spanned these topics. And we go back to when I first encountered your book, Trilaterals Over Washington, that you co-authored with the late Anthony Sutton. And in there, I was disturbed because I saw how our governmental process was being hijacked by people like the Rockefellers. And in fact, the book was tremendous. tremendous in its documentation about how much the Rockefellers controlled. And now let's go full circle. It's no longer just about hijacking industry and government. It's hijacking every aspect of our life, every single part of what we do, how much energy we use, our freedom of travel, our free speech, our lack thereof, our freedom of religion. It's all under attack right now.
It is. And there's nothing left unturned. And the way it, the big picture, Dave, is these people are hunting for they're trying to take down all the resources in the world, not just the money. They're going for the resources now, the land, the agricultural, you know, food. They're going for forests and mining and oil and you name it, everything in the ground. They're trying to capture that for the global elite. And resources, if you think about it now, this is the way they think, not you and I, but the way they look at us is we are simply another resource on planet Earth that needs to be captivated and subdued. That's it. We're a resource. Some people call us human capital, right? But we're a resource to them. And so managing a resource like people is no different than managing a resource like cattle.
Well, that's how they view us. Here's something, too, that has stuck with me, and I've contemplated this for a long time. When I used to interview Jim Mars, and I interviewed him quite frequently when he was healthy, and the late Jim Mars, I should say, mm-hmm. and Jim said on more than one occasion, it's amazing to me it's gone this far because there's more of us than there is of them. How would you respond to that?
They have the big guns of big technology. We don't. It's just that simple.
They're outnumbered, but you're saying they control the choke points of power.
Absolutely. They do. I mean, how can you say that Google doesn't basically control the whole internet?
They do. 80% of all searches are run through Google. They do. In fact, I'll give you an example of their dominance. They don't like yours truly because I don't swing with the liberal line. And mm-hmm. Google used to account for 20% of my web traffic at thecommonsenseshow.com. Today, it's about 0.3%.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah, and I left, I used to advertise with Google AdSense. I still have an ad up on my website, and I put it there as kind of a barometer. And here's mm-hmm. what I mean. I used to make somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 for an ad per month with regard to Google on their AdSense. My last month was something around $71.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows you how they're directing traffic away from me. You know, and I don't put it up there because I'm hoping they'll come back. I just keep it there as a barometer of the extreme censorship we're facing. Let's talk about that for a minute, too, because mm-hmm. I know you're facing the same challenges I am with censorship. Are we fighting over the unclaimed turf of 65% of Americans that are confused and ignorant? Is that what this is about?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, at their core, they are afraid of a numbers uprising.
Well, the populist movement has been giving them generally fits, but it also has played into their scheme. And technocrats are very much into the idea of decentralization, pushing power away from Washington and central governments out to people. They're looking at things like you know, like regional government stuff is more important to them than having a centralized government. So they're at odds with the populist movement on one hand, but they're also in sync with them on another. So they kind of got the best of both worlds.
Are they winning, or are they going to have to resort to the violence card?
No, they are winning. Right now, they are winning. And that's why I got so motivated to create Citizens for Free Speech just recently as a tax exempt foundation to try and get a common voice to address these things on a national scale. Somebody's got to do it. Nobody's done it yet, Dave. I said we just can't sit by and let this happen. So I went through the organizational efforts to get the Citizens for Free Speech organized and tax exempt status, stuff like that. And we're taking after it. We're taking after it. We've got a bunch of volunteers already signed up, and our audience is going to grow. And you know, we're going to try and make a big stink about it.
Well, someone needs to hear. And wait, that was an interesting cutout. Do I still have you, Pat?
You do.
Okay. I look at this situation and what we're talking about here about controlling the key choke points, mm-hmm. and they do. They control the media. They control the internet through the search engines. They control all the social media platforms. You know, someone was bragging to me the other day, well, at least Facebook isn't number one in Arizona anymore. And I said, oh, what is? Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, who the hell owns Snapchat? Do you know that? Answer, Google.
Yeah.
So you don't get away from them. They're incessant in what mm-hmm. they're doing. Are we headed for an Orwellian? Is the Russians used to joke about the Russians, you know, in Russia, we don't watch TV, TV watches us. Is that what we're really headed towards? Is it going to be that bad?
Well, a scientific dictatorship will come down with most people loving their dictatorship. You know, they won't think it's abnormal. People are glued and addicted to their cell phones, or addicted to the technology. They're addicted to their apps. And you know what? You look at any addicted person, be it technology or be it drugs, they're all in the same boat, right?
You're describing a Stockholm syndrome.
That's right.
Technology.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Man, yep. I never thought of it that way. Here, I just had an epiphany, because for those that don't know, in the listening audience, when someone is kidnapped, it's not unusual for them after a period of time, because their kidnappers hold their resources and key to survival, that they actually begin to bond and identify with their kidnappers. And that was given a name in the 70s called the Stockholm Syndrome.
Right.
And Pat, what you're describing here fits that description perfectly.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And most people are just not going to get it. They're going to go happily, you know, happily into, you know, taking their little dopamine producing devices and stuff, and they won't know the difference.
Let's talk about predictive programming for a second. Mm-hmm. There's a show on TV, and I don't know if you've encountered it yet. It's called The Crossing. Have you come across that?
No, I haven't. Sounds interesting.
It's a Monday evening show on ABC, and the only reason I've been watching it, and I kind of fast forward to the irrelevant human bonding things just to get to the heart of the technocratic stuff, but yeah. The show is about people from the year 2192 who mm-hmm. are regular humans like you and I, Pat, but mm-hmm. there's been a super race of humans created through selective breeding.
That's the only contact information.
Yeah, hold on one second.
That I have at this point.
I got to cut out the audio. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I have, we're talking about the show, The Crossing, and in that show, there's a super race created, governed by a group called Apex, and they have superhuman strength. They have super healing powers, super technology, and they're trying to exterminate the average person. So they have mastered time travel, and these people had unauthorized use to time travel, and they came into the present time in 2018 only to find that their pursuers are there. And trying to keep the knowledge of the conflict going on in 2192 from reaching the American government that's not already been compromised by this group.
Right.
Here's what I'm wondering. Are we looking at a two-tiered system of transhumanism where we'll have the supers versus the outdated regulars? Is that where this is headed to?
It would naturally head that way, Dave. You have we've always had a system of haves and have-nots, always, going back thousands of years. And so that's the case today. as technology for the elite advances, the people on the bottom rung will never see it, ever. I mean, consider all the people that are going to be on universal basic income because they lose jobs to robotics. How are those people ever, ever going to have enough money to participate in anything above that, that lowest level of society? They won't. So, yes, we'll have the haves and the have-nots, and it'll be a radical division. In fact, there's been some dystopian movies that display it exactly like that, right, where you have people living in, you know, nice modern cities, and then you have other people that are, you know, that are out there, you know, living in squalor. So.
It's I hear it. In fact, there was that one movie that the elite lived in the sky. I think it was called Elysium. I didn't see it, but I learned a lot about it from what people told me, and that the there was squalor on the earth. And but I don't think they're going to let the squalor proliferate. See, you talked about universal basic income. I think when we're no longer needed, and that's what this is about, because you don't have a job to go to because it's been automated out of existence, I think they're going to go to universal basic extinction.
Right.
What kind of evidence or paper trail have the technocrats left that at some point in time they're going to conduct what we'd refer to as genocide, whether it be quick genocide or slow burn kill? Have you found any evidence to support that view?
Dave, it's, we don't have to worry so much about people, you know, being systematically murdered, in my opinion, because the demographics in the Western world all headed straight down. And, you know, you add to that some of the other pressures of society and stuff that are going on, the immigration and the, you know, the turnover society, the birth rates have been reduced in most Western countries now to below, well below replacement level. And whereas the population bomb mentality is still, you know, kind of the elite pitch, the fact is we're going to start losing population like crazy within about another 5 to 6 years, and the world population is going to start to go down. It's going to continue to go down because people aren't having babies.
Is that for environmental reasons, or is it because when, as the world industrializes, women delay the birth of their first child, so their fecundity rates are lower?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons for it. You know, there are actual parties that take place up in places like Portland right now, where young people get together and commit together to not have children because they don't want to hurt the environment. You've got the United Nations producing children's books. I saw one coloring book in particular that was written for young children, and it basically said every time, in fact, not basically, it says specifically that whenever a baby is born, the earth groans.
Yes.
You know, how can...
I've heard that.
That's crazy. So there, yeah. So you know, people have just shut up. They had China with this one child policy. It's still that way. Well, actually, they're easing up on it a little bit right now. But you know, Russia has such a low birth rate that they decided to have a sex day, so and everybody stay home and you know make babies.
So. Okay, I know there's a joke there, but we'll just let that pass, and let's go to the birth rates. I want to return to that for a second. I know the replacement rate that a country has to maintain in order to maintain itself is 2.1.
Right.
You know, obviously, you know, one kid per parent, and you need the 0.1 because there's mortality involved, you know, sudden infant death syndrome and so forth. So when we look at that, in a previous conversation we had on that topic, Pat, you told me that no nation's ever come back from less than 1.8.
That's right.
And we are at less than 1.8. We are one. I read the other day where the United States is at 1.77.
That's right. Yeah, we are on the downhill slide. Yeah.
My goodness.
That's right. And you know that's why I say that the people's anxiety over population control is largely misunderstood. The global elite understand what we're talking about here. They understand birth rate. They understand replacement rate. They understand, you know, general dynamics of the field of sociology. So, you know, they see this and they're talking about population going down. And it is. Whether they ever pick up a gun to shoot anybody, it's going to go down anyway.
Yeah. How does immigration, this mass immigration that's overtaken Europe with catastrophic consequences, and what's threatening to happen here, actually to some degree it's already happened here, but we're not as bad off as Europe in my estimation. When you already have a continent like Europe that's in severe decline with regard to its birth rate, why do you need to pile on top of that millions of immigrants? What's the strategy behind that?
Well, this is to homogenize society, to mix it up, to, you know, make society you know, multicultural. This has never worked anywhere successfully, by the way. But this whole idea of migration in Europe, for instance, was a 100% Trilateral Commission effort through the United Nations. Peter Sutherland was a guy that went around Europe and then got them to open up their borders and quotas and stuff for immigrants. but the idea, and they said it plainly, and they still say it, that the key to sustainable development is immigration. And so, you know, if that's what they believe, that the sustainable development is going to be made possible by immigration, then that's why they're going to open up borders everywhere.
Is that because the immigration deculturizes a nation? It causes people to lose their past, their history, and they're more moldable towards what's coming?
That's exactly right. It destroys history. Yeah.
I recall when I took an anthropology class as an undergraduate, the question came up, if the human race was perfectly blended on a mating situation, what would the average person look like? And the answer that I was given by an anthropologist was Polynesians would be the norm. The mean. So, you know, if you mix, you know, Asians and blacks and whites and so forth, you'd come up with a Polynesian mix. Have you ever come across anything like that? And is this their goal? They're basically trying to uniform the human race to where there really aren't the different races?
I haven't seen anything specifically about that, although we do know that the whole field of eugenics has been very important for the global elite for a very long time, like probably over 100 years. And we still see a sense of that today with you know, immigration policies and the way, you know, societies are being pushed together.
With regard to the transhumanist notion of creating a superhuman being, much like the show I referred to a few moments ago called The Crossing, are we at that bifurcation point yet? Have we crossed the Rubicon? Where are we at with the division of the human race between the extreme gifted and the lesser talented left behind?
Well, it's a really good question.
I apologize for the technical issues we're having here. We're doing a pre-record with Pat Wood a couple of days before you're hearing this. And who knows why we're having trouble. You always suspect the powers that be. And sometimes it's just good old-fashioned technology that doesn't work real well. But we're back with Patrick Wood. And Pat, what we had talked about here before we encountered the difficulties, and I had asked you the question about the bifurcation point where you get this super race of humans, and you've got the subservient beasts who are here to serve their every whim and their every need, and that last group is being bred out of existence to a large extent, and you had said that we are there. Can you give me some examples to where people can look at it and say, yeah, Pat's right, we are there, I just didn't see it before?
Yeah, absolutely. You've got most of the younger generation right now are wandering around in a fog, bumping into light poles and bumping into each other as they, you know, move about, looking at their cell phones and their other gadgets, their tablets and whatever. not socially interacting with each other hardly at all anymore. That's one reason that the baby rate has gone down so much, is that people, young people now, just aren't so interested in sex anymore. You know, they can get everything they need online, and they don't need to interact with other people. But this is an addiction right now that that people have across the world. It's just as addicting as a drug, because it's stimulating your dopamine production in your brain. It's literally rewiring your brain. And people in that state of mind are easily manipulated. And the constant stream of propaganda that's coming out to them through their devices, their smartphones, and so on, are leading them in a way to become, quote-unquote, good little global citizens. That's the only way I can look at it. The people at the top, the ones that are in big tech, that are completely sold out to the idea of transhumanism, that is becoming, you know, creating humans 2.0 through the application of technology. This is all, by and large, all on their head, Dave. They haven't had one positive step to actually accomplishing that, but they think they have. They believe that they're a super race already, because they are, after all, transhumans. They're in process of becoming transhumans, and that sets them apart in their own mind right now. So you already have the haves and the have-nots. They think they've already done it, but they really haven't. They're deceived into thinking that. But nevertheless, you have the haves and the have-nots, and those people at the top think that they can basically view the rest of the world as resources. We talked about resources earlier. We're just a resource to them. That's all it is. We're no different than the fish, the koi fish in a pond. We're no different than the cattle in the field or the feedlot. We're no different than the horses on the range. We're just a resource, and resources need to be managed. It's according to the herd science, right? Resources need to be managed, and we are the managed, and they are the managers. This is a very evil philosophy, by the way, but it's them versus everyone else. Everyone else is the resource that needs to be managed, and they are the managers. This is the way technocracy has been from the get-go, when it was first invented back in the early 1930s at Columbia University. That part has not ever, ever, ever changed. Humans are resources, no more, no less, to be managed.
And these people, I'm assuming, don't think of themselves as humans.
Well, they're in transition towards being transhuman. This they do believe. You know, people like Ray Kurzweil, for instance, that head of engineering at Google. He's fully convinced that he's going to be a full-fledged transhuman within a few years if he doesn't die first, because he's getting up in years. But he fully believes he's going to be transhuman, and that it's as good as done. In other words, in their mind. The other people, the whole culture at Google and these other big tech firms, they all have this this idea that they're going to create superhumans, if you will, humanity 2.0, if you will, where we'll be able to download our brains into computers, and the computers, your brain will be able to be uploaded into other avatars. It's really crazy stuff, but they haven't done it. It's science fiction. They haven't done it. They haven't achieved any success in any area, truly, but they think they have, and they think they've got the key to make it happen. So they're not just going to go away, you know, and their attitude is that the rest of humanity is just so much resources that need to be managed. Just think of a feedlot. You've driven by a feedlot before where, you know, there's 25 or 50,000 head of cattle. They're managed. They push them from pen to pen. They stick them full of needles. They give them a scientific ration of food. And, then off to the slaughterhouse they go in the end. I guess, you know, they live, they're born, they live, and they die. That's the way they look at humanity.
Well, Pat, I've got two technical questions for you here that I think apply here. One is the population reduction strategy. I hate to ask this because I find it such a disgusting topic. But is this what's behind the sex bots?
Well, it's a natural extension of it. I'll tell you, I don't think anybody's sitting there at the top thinking, hey, I know a good way to mess up the population. Let's go create sex bots. Sex bots would have happened We've had all kinds of sex toys and devices for as long as humans have been around. I think back in age, I just read somewhere recently, even back in ancient Egypt, they found dildos buried with people. You know, it's like, okay, so nothing has changed. Well, maybe they weren't battery operated, but you know, the idea has been there for sex toys. And this, you know, now that robots are possible, sex bots are becoming a big thing, and they are achieving that effect. People are saying, you know, sex bots are better than being married.
If I was, well, there's not the courtship period. You're not spending the money to wine and dine and romance. I hear what the implication is there. But, Pat, if I was a transhumanist and I wanted to kill the birth rate of humanity and just give males a natural sexual outlet that children don't come out of that union, to me, I would have planned it this way. I would have done it this way. I think it's a perfect population reduction instrument, and it's just a matter now is, well, I'll know if I'm right if this really proliferates in large numbers. I mean, right now it's pretty obscure, but if this begins to proliferate, and then the other thing that you have to wonder about with this situation is something like 5G. And I've been doing a lot of reading on 5G, and I'm talking about scientific data, meta-analysis of the effects on the brain. And I wrote an article that was nothing but pure scientific research, and I'm sure people yawned their way through it. But if they could have stayed with it, they would have seen the evidence is overwhelming that 5G is deadly and will kill everybody at some point in time, even though we have different levels of who will succumb first. So, Pat, back to my question. I asked earlier, why would people raise their children in this cesspool? How can they expect to survive in this lethal environment they're creating with 5G?
Well, that's a problem, isn't it? That's a lot of people are starting to get wise to the implementation of 5G, but I have listened to industry speakers, industry leaders in the 5G world, the mobile world, that have basically said, we're doing this. We don't care about the consequences. We're doing this for their reasons, not for anybody else's, but for their reasons. And their reasons are this. They want to light up, if you will, the entire Internet of Things on a global basis. The Internet of Things connects everything inanimate and animate together into a single network that communicates with each other and can communicate, collect data back to a master control center. This is their goal, to create smart cities, smart pavements, smart cars, smart everything. They call it smart. It's really dumb. But that's what they're trying to do. And that's what 5G is all about, because it's going to enable such high speed of transmission that everything will be able to have a wireless device in it, a 5G device in it, to transmit data back to the central location at virtual instantaneous speed. This has never happened before. Imagine everybody connected by fiber optic cable. That's not it. It's just like, wow. You know, you got instant access to anything, anywhere.
That's part of the addiction.
It is
downright frightening. Well, Pat, in the time we have left, you have and you're sponsoring a transhumanism conference in the state of Washington, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk about that, and I know the time to register is really drawing short, but you do have an alternative way that people can attend and probably be a little more convenient with their attendance. Let's talk about this.
Well, yeah, the Red Pill Expo is the brainchild originally of G. Everett Griffin, the guy who originally exposed the Federal Reserve with his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And Ed's up in years, but he's sharp as a tack.
Yes.
And he started Red Pill Expo to pull back the illusion in the world and, you know, present some parts of the world, at least, as they really are. So we've brought together about 30 different experts in one area or another to this conference to discuss and to, you know, bring people in to take the red pill, like the Matrix movies said years ago. We want people to wake up and see the world as it really is. That's what we're going to try to do. And there is a live stream option now. It's coming up next week. I mean, it's just a week away now. But, well, it's in 2 weeks, on the 21st. But of June, but we have a live stream option that people can go and buy a ticket to, and they can watch the entire proceedings 100% on a live stream feed. It's going to be high quality video. They can put it up on the TV, and if they want, they can invite some friends over to have their own little mini red pill. And it's going to cost around $100 for a pay-per-view ticket for the whole thing, for the whole event. It's going to be really good, Dave. That's all I can say. Some of these speakers are finally getting their opportunity to give their message out. And you mentioned transhumanism at the first part. I would say this, leave this in people's minds. Technocracy is to society what transhumanism is to individuals. And they're both based, they're Siamese twins, basically, they're joined at the hip, philosophically at least. And the transhuman idea would field citizens who are appropriate for life in a technocracy. A technocracy is the social system that would manage those transhumans. We don't know how it's going to all work out yet, but basically that's, you know, kind of the way it is. So you need to look at both fields at the same time. What are they doing to society to prepare it? What are they doing to humans to prepare it or them for a technocratic society?
No, I hear exactly what you're saying, and it's a tragedy we've come to this point, but at this point we are there. I understand, and we're really short on time, but I understand that my listening audience has been granted a privilege of getting a discount. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. I think all they have to do when they buy a ticket, anything they put in the shopping cart, one ticket, two tickets, or whether it's a live stream ticket or an actual ticket, you can get a 15% discount off the retail prices by putting in, I believe it was Hodges, was it not, Dave?
Yes.
I think that's the code. Yep, that's the code. Put it in, Hodges, Hodges.
Well, it's hopeful my audience can remember that name, and that'll get you 15% off. And that's good for the live stream event, too, is that correct?
It sure is.
Okay. Well, yep. Pat, my friend, we are out of time. Sorry about the technical issues there, but we seem to have mastered it and got beyond it. This has been very informative. I wish you lots of luck with the conference, and I'm encouraging people to go because you're not going to get a gathering of experts on this subject like you are at this conference. I mean, you got the meeting of the great minds. Yep. Pat, thanks so much. Again, everybody, the Red Pill Expo, and use the coupon code Hodges to take 15% off. Thanks, Pat.
You bet, Dave. Thank you.